Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is award-winning author Leonard S. Marcus, and we're talking about his latest book, Mr. Lincoln Sits for His Portrait, the story of a photograph that became an American icon. Leonard, welcome back to the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, thank you, Mark. It's great to be back.
This is a fascinating book, and we were just talking about this off mic, because as an adult, I read it, and I got a lot out of it. There's obviously a lot I did know, but a lot I didn't know. But is this really geared for, like, middle school people and high school students?
Well, I tried to keep it short enough and clear enough so that an interested 9- or 10-year-old, you know, would be very at home with it. But I didn't, compromise on my research.
No.
And I really looked for information about Lincoln that isn't that widely known. So I think it would be of interest to an adult who is a Lincoln fan.
I mean, I've interviewed people about massive Lincoln biographies.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I can honestly say this book is fun. And it's not because it's a funny book, but it was just enjoyable because of the way you write. And because it's focused on a very narrow subject, yet there are all these threads that lead off from that that are really fascinating. Now, this focuses on a very specific photograph.
Yes.
But it's actually about photography in general, too. That's one of the sort of parallel themes of this. When do you consider photography to have been invented, and where?
It happened in waves, because the first photographs were possibly in the late 1820s, but certainly by 1839. But at that time, they could only capture images of things that were standing still, and any motion in the frame would, be a disruption of the process. And I think it was in the 1840s that they began to work on doing portraits. And that became a very, very big thing in Europe, France, and England, and in the U.S. And one of the forms that portraits soon took were the equivalent of playing cards or calling cards with people's images on them.
Carte de visites.
That's right.
I love that term.
Yeah. Well, it started in France. It means in English calling card, basically. And people, of course, it was so exciting to be able to have your own picture printed up in multiples. Consider the background. Prior to that, you had to be practically a king, to get any sort of image of yourself made by an artist. But now it's becoming very democratized. And then along with the cards of yourself, which you might give to family members, like to a soldier going off to war, as a keepsake, to business people, associates, a second sort of category emerged of cards of famous people, because the major photographers like Matthew Brady, who was based both in Washington and New York City, photographed all the presidents, all the senators, and the arrangement, it seems, in those days was that the photographer had the right to make hay from those images. And, could sell as many copies of them as they wanted. Of course, it was good for building your reputation or popularity to have your picture spread all around the country. So there was apparently no objection to that. It was like collecting Pokemon cards or baseball cards.
An important point you make in this book is, and maybe people didn't realize it, the first photographs you couldn't do multiples of.
Right.
I'm talking about daguerreotypes from Louis Daguerre.
That's right.
You just essentially had this one, print, and that was it. And they had to invent the negative.
That's right. That was the huge breakthrough.
It's a huge breakthrough, especially for Lincoln.
That's right. Yeah. And he was, he was married to a very politically savvy woman, Mary Lincoln, whose parents were in, the Kentucky political world, and she must have urged him in 1846 or 7, around the time that he was elected to the U.S. Congress, to go have his portrait taken, because it would be good for his career. And when you look at that very first photo taken of Lincoln, which is in my book,
yeah,
you see someone who is, you can tell, is squirming in his seat and dressed, you know.
It reminded me of the first videos of Nixon.
Oh,
and the
yeah,
Nixon
exactly.
Kennedy debate yeah. was somebody yeah. who's not really ready for the camera, didn't understand how the camera worked.
That's right.
That's how yeah. Lincoln looked in that photograph.
Yeah, and his hair is slicked down, and his hand is in the foreground, so it looks much almost as big as his head. There's so many things that are wrong with that photograph. And Mary had her photograph taken in the same sitting, and she's looking very poised and, you know, you might say pre-presidential, like, because she had hopes for the future, political hopes for the two of them. But Lincoln went back approximately 10 years later to have his picture taken again. At that point, he was a successful lawyer and aspiring to be in the U.S. Senate. And he started going back pretty regularly to have his picture taken.
Right.
And he got the hang of it, because he realized that, you know, people were saying, his enemies were all saying in speeches, you know, he's ugly, he's ungainly, he's a, you know, a country hick, basically. And he realized that the right photograph could change all that. And it could do it for, you know, millions of people in one fell swoop. So he began to, he almost became a collaborator of the photographers he thought were really good. And there's one wonderful photograph from the 1850s where his hair is all tousled.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think he looks like a movie star, you know, and Mary didn't like that one because she thought it wasn't formal enough, you know, but it was the real, Lincoln thought it was the real him, you know, and he always said that was his favorite photograph. And then he went on to have more formal looking pictures. And then finally, in 1864, at a sitting when a whole bunch of really famous photographs were made all at once, he sat with his son, Tad, who was 10 years old, and it was set up to look like he was reading a big book, possibly the Bible, though it wasn't really a Bible.
It wasn't the Bible. What was it?
This was at Matthew Brady's Washington studio, and it was their sales catalog. It's what they would show their customers so they could see, you know, what the options were. It's kind of funny. And the great thing is, you know, Lincoln loved the theater, and he put his reading glasses on.
Yep.
And he got his son to stand still, which was no mean feat because he was very jittery kind of kid. And so Lincoln was pretending to read the Bible to his son, who was pretending to listen. So it was a piece of theater, basically, political theater.
Well, let's stay with Tad for a minute, because, yeah. like I said, the great thing about your writing and in this book is that every mention leads to a thread.
Yeah.
Tad sounds like he might have been a child with some diagnosable problems today.
Yes. He had, I don't think anyone has ventured to diagnose him, you know, retrospectively, but he clearly had major learning problems. And at the age of 10, when he stood for this photograph, he still did not know how to read. You know, so there, maybe he was dyslexic. He had attention deficit
right.
issues.
Because he was always acting out. I mean, he was interrupting
yeah,
cabinet meetings
right.
and all this stuff all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, adding to, you know, the list of things that he had to contend with, his slightly older brother had died a year earlier,
right.
someone he adored, you know, and, you know, the war was going on. There was so much grief in the White House while he was growing up there. And, you know, he dealt with that by craving attention and sort of being the class clown and pulling all sorts of pranks. Apparently he once took some of his parents' clothing out of their closet and had a like a tag sale on the White House lawn. The guy had guts.
That is excellent.
And after...
He sounds now more like Dennis the Menace.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. And Willie, the son who died in 1862, was, I think everyone says, was the Lincoln's favorite because he was so outgoing and so clearly, you know, brilliant and such a kind, decent child. And Tad sort of, you know, it's hard to live up to something like that. And Tad was kind of the wounded, I called him the wounded bird, you know.
Yeah.
People felt sorry for him, and they were more than happy to be engaged by his pranks.
It's fascinating writing, and you're writing about Lincoln, is you really get the idea that he was a savvy politician. I mean, there was no doubt about it. And the way he knew how to use photography. I mean, this photograph in question is still a photograph that people look at today and think about the ideal qualities of of the president. And you know, people who are religious will go, you know, see, that's the importance of the Bible. And so there are people still using this photograph and getting stuff out of it today.
Oh, yeah. And in 1982, it was the subject of a U.S. postage stamp honoring literacy, you know. But before, long before that, see, what happened was Lincoln didn't want to deceive the public, and he really was Honest Abe. And so when he realized that some people would think it was a Bible that he was holding, he appears to have withheld that photograph. He didn't allow it to be reproduced in his lifetime. But then right after he died, a very, very, like the equivalent of Time magazine of the day called Harper's Weekly, did a whole issue devoted to his passing. And for the cover image, they had a wood engraving made based on the photo of Lincoln reading to Tad. They got the photographer's permission to do that. And they labeled it the president at home, you know, meaning in heaven. And I mean, it was done in a studio, so it literally wasn't at home. But it was you know, it was put out there as an as the image to remember him by, you know, so as if to say, even in wartime, he had the, you know, the humanity to look after his child and to share a story or possibly the Bible with him.
Family values, man.
Yeah,
that's exactly.
Yeah,
I mean,
very much so.
But wait, when you, again, one of the threads in your book, people don't realize that the newspapers at the time couldn't reproduce photographs.
Right. That's right. So what they did was they got a photograph, and then they had these incredibly skilled wood engravers who would do line images of the photographic image, and it would be a pretty close likeness. And that's what they did. And then, I mean, people were, I think, just going crazy over their new access to visual images in that era. And you found them in magazines and newspapers. But then people also bought prints to put on their walls at home.
Yep.
And that Lincoln photo reading to his son began to morph many, many times after it first appeared in Harper's Magazine. Sometimes the artist would insert some of the other children from the family into the picture and create a whole Lincoln family tribute. And they kept... we think of photographic manipulation as a thing of our time, you know, thanks to Photoshop. But they were doing it back in the 1860s using engravings. And so people were beginning to understand both the uses and misuses of visual imagery. And Lincoln, really, I really don't think he was ever trying to deceive anyone at all.
No.
He was just trying. In fact, he was trying to defeat the people who were saying these nasty, unfair things about him, and using, putting it back in their face by finding photographs that presented him as a leader.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight, always a pleasure to talk with him, is award-winning author Leonard S. Marcus. And we're talking about his latest book. I love this book. Mr. Lincoln Sits for His Portrait, The Story of a Photograph That Became an American Icon. Now, so much else is going on in this book, too, not the least of which is the Civil War.
Yeah.
That's going on. Now, I want to mention one of the cool things in this book is there's a running Lincoln timeline that goes throughout the book until the finish. And that's really helpful to keep track of what's happening when.
Yeah.
But I want to get back to photography because I want to talk about Matthew Brady because that seemed like you could have done a whole book about Matthew Brady's sort of tragic life.
Yes.
Let's talk about who he was and his two studios.
Well, he was one of the first great portrait photographers. And he first set up an office in New York City, and it was right down the street from P.T. Barnum's museum. And they were two of a kind in the sense that they were both very flamboyant and brilliant self-promoters. They they had something to offer the world, and they weren't shy about it. Brady would hang out in the lobbies of the most fancy hotels, hoping to meet, you know, senators and other people who happened to be passing through town, and kind of lure them into his photo studio. And he had a big gallery space in his studio, which was open to the public for free, where he showed off lots of his, you know, work of famous subjects. It was like the freebie that lures you in, and it was essentially an art museum, you know. But you could
buy all this stuff too.
Yes, you could. And I mean, he had a lot to be proud of, and you could buy an image of, say, Daniel Webster, or Lincoln, or James Buchanan. There was the deluxe version, and then at the opposite end of the scale were these carte de visites, which cost about a quarter. So you could come in at almost any price point and find images to your liking. So Brady thought, he was very substantial, and he thought a lot of himself. And when the Civil War came along, he decided it was his sort of patriotic duty to document the war photographically. And he was going to spare no expense to do that. So he took camera crews out in, like, sort of covered wagons to the battlefields. And because you couldn't photograph, you know, fast-moving things yet in those days, because the shutter speeds were too long, he tended to photograph the run-up to battles, you know, the encampments where the soldiers were massing, and the aftermath of sometimes with dead soldiers lying in the fields. He basically bankrupted himself by doing this because he believed that what he was doing was so culturally valuable, and I would say that it was, that Congress would be anxious to buy his archive, you know, for the nation, have it reside in the Library of Congress or in the Congressional, I think at that time it would have been the Capitol building. And they declined. So he didn't have a backup plan. And he just overextended himself. And as you say, it really was tragic because he died essentially a poor man.
Now, again, there's so much going on in this book. Washington, the place.
Yes.
Was under construction.
Yes.
At the time of this.
I really loved writing about that.
And the great thing is there are photographs.
Yes.
Of this. And the photographs are really wild. Like the Washington Monument is like half made.
That's right. It was actually one third of its intended height, which was 555 feet, because Congress ran out of money. And, you know, it's a project that some people might feel wasn't really that essential. So when Lincoln looked out the window of his second floor office, there was no Oval Office in those days, what he saw was this half constructed thing sticking up out of the ground. And it was meant to be, you know, grand and you know, something like out of Paris. But it didn't become that during his tenure. And there were all these, you know, if you've been there, there are all these beautiful lawns with flags on them. So he decided, rather than have it all go to waste, he would allow cattle owned by the federal government to graze on that property. So he basically turned it into a cattle ranch.
Well, even the Capitol building wasn't finished yet.
That's right. And that's really my
favorite.
That whole
look of Washington during this time of this book was really haphazard looking.
Oh, yeah. And think about it. I mean, Lincoln is coming into town. The country is about to tear itself in half. And the Capitol, the place of power, the seat of power, is itself this half-baked enterprise. I mean, a lesser person, I think, would have, you know, been depressed and just packed up his bags and gone home. But Lincoln, who took the oath of office under the Capitol dome that did not have a top, you know, it's like this hole at the top, he decided that it would be a really important thing to finish the dome, so which was very expensive thing to do. It was a major engineering feat, requiring many, many tons of iron. And so he decided to do it. And you know, his enemies, it was the perfect thing for his enemies to attack him on. They said, well, you know, couldn't you find something more relevant to the war effort and to spend the money on? And he said, I can't think of anything that's more relevant, because we need to show the world that the federal government can start whatever, can finish whatever it starts. And this would be the visible proof of that. So this, just with, as with photographs, this shows you how keenly attuned he was to symbolism and to the power of a visual gesture to reach out to, you know, millions of people that he could never, you know, see face to face.
We're running out of time, but I think of all the things I want to talk about yet is the 11-year-old Grace Bettle story.
Oh, yeah.
Because speaking about visuals...
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really charming. She was an 11-year-old girl living in upstate New York. Her parents were political, and they sided with Lincoln. And she wrote him a fan letter in the weeks leading up to the election of 1860, suggesting that he consider growing a beard if he wanted to win. And it, her logic was that the ladies, as she said, all love men with whiskers. And if he were to grow some, they would talk their husbands into voting for him. Remember, women couldn't vote in those days. So that was her logic. And, you know, it was a kind of, it was a pretty savvy suggestion coming from an 11-year-old. Lincoln responded in a handwritten letter within days. He treated it very seriously. He said, don't you think people might see me as, you know, taking on airs if I were suddenly to grow a beard after not having had one up until now? And but he's, you know, left it open that he would think about it. And then it appears that he, well, I know that he went to Chicago a couple of weeks later to have yet another portrait of himself taken. And in that picture, you see a few whiskers sprouting on his chin. It's not yet a full beard. And I don't know this for a fact, but I have a feeling that he, you know, made a sort of secret trip, maybe had a scarf around his neck so that no one could see his chin. And he just wanted to see what it would look like by having his picture taken and then make a decision. And, of course, we know that he did opt to grow out a full beard. And by the time he went to Washington on this long, circuitous 13-hour train ride where he made lots of stops in cities to try to rally the nation and show his face to the world, by then he had his the beard we know him for.
And he actually gave her a shout-out in a speech, didn't he?
Yes, he did, and a hug. You know, he said, if Grace Bettle is here, you know, raise your hand. And she came forward, and he gave her a warm embrace. And, I mean, it was something right out of you know, the photo ops of today, really.
It really is. Again, he's a savvy of the way things appear.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was genuine. It was heartfelt, I think, but also incredibly smart of him politically.
Besides this photograph, which is so famous, and we only have a few minutes left, and there's so much more we could talk about in this book, Lincoln portraits are used on the $5 bill and the penny. Now, those are different portraits of Lincoln. Can you talk about those?
Sure. Well, they were there were two $5 bills, the one we have now and the one that replaced it about 10 or 15 years ago. Both of those Lincoln images and the one on the penny were all based on photographs taken at the same sitting as the photo of Lincoln reading to his son. The photographer was someone who worked for Matthew Brady in Washington, called Anthony Berger. Very, very little is known about him, but clearly Lincoln thought highly of him because he could have had his pick of photographers. And on that red letter day, February 9th, 1864, they really hit pay dirt, you know, and they produced a handful of the absolutely best known of all Lincoln photographs.
Wow. I mean, think of it. Your portrait's on a penny, although people don't see pennies as much as they used to.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a well-circulated portrait.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, later postage stamps, many, many stamps were made
with
Lincoln's image on it. I at one point calculated what number on the list the one of based on the Lincoln photograph with Tad was, but it was well into the dozens by then.
And I never knew this, but maybe I read this wrong, but Lincoln was the first person to create sort of Thanksgiving as a holiday and the whole pardoning of the turkey?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little, there's a, more of a twist to it in that he had been given a turkey for Christmas dinner. And one of the things that he spent his days doing was receiving letters from people, either soldiers or their family, where there was a desertion or some other crime had been committed.
Oh, right.
That was a capital offense. And Lincoln sat in judgment day after day on these people deciding who should live and who should die. He hated to send people to the firing squad, and he often looked for a way out. And Ted, almost to make good fun of all that, told his father that he should pardon this turkey also, rather than have the family eat it for Christmas. So that kind of blended with the first Thanksgiving celebration, which I think Lincoln established during the time of the Civil War. Now the president pardons the Thanksgiving turkey, not the Christmas turkey.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing is there's so much more in this book, which seems small. I was fascinated by how open the White House was. That was insane. We can't talk about it now because we're completely out of time.
Oh.
But I mean, that was insane to read about that. I can't imagine that ever happening again.
No, absolutely not.
My returning guest tonight is award-winning author Leonard S. Marcus, and we've been talking about his latest book, Mr. Lincoln Sits for His Portrait, The Story of a Photograph That Became an American Icon. Leonard, it's such a pleasure to talk to you about this book. This book was fun to read and fascinating.
Oh, thank you so much, Mark. I've really enjoyed this.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.